Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello and welcome. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. Happy Sunday. Happy Labor Day weekend. Good luck, Tar Heels. You play Texas Christian University in just a couple of days. Good luck with that game. Folks, this is the show, you've heard this before if you've listened to the show, that won't define creativity for you because it's too important for anybody to define it for you. You need to come up with your own understanding. In today's show, let's call this the origin story of my calling. It's the story of how I got captivated and delighted to be captivated and captured by this concept that each of us and all of us need to be our most creative selves, that nothing is as important. And so this is where this all comes from, this idea that I have and the ideas that have surrounded it. It begins in 2001, about 2 weeks before Christmas 2001, when I got a phone call from Duke University, from a representative of the Markets and Management Studies program at Duke University in the sociology department. The sociology department started the program because a few years before that, Duke had dropped its business major for undergrads, and so there was no business classes offered to undergrads, and they saw this as an opportunity. They developed the Markets and Management Studies program. They asked me if I would teach a course in entrepreneurship starting in just a few weeks, in early January for spring semester 2002. And initially, folks, I said no. I wanted so badly to say yes. It sounded like such a fun, cool thing. I'd been an entrepreneur at that point for 25 years or so. But I said no. And fortunately for me, they asked me why I said no. And I told them it was because I had been such a lousy college student, I knew you were going to ask for my college transcript, and when you see my transcript, you're going to change your mind. And they said, no, we will ask for your transcript, only to make sure that you have graduated from an accredited school, but no, we're not going to make any qualitative decision beyond that. And when I did get my transcript, by the way, I was right about what a poor college student I was. Out of a class of 354 students, my class rank was 350. What those other folks were doing, I don't know, because I wasn't doing very much. And so they provided me with a curriculum. They had created a curriculum for the entrepreneurship class. I walked in the door realizing that this was really a foreign environment for me. I hadn't been in a college classroom for 30 years, and I was barely in one when I was at school. But what I had some experience at was bringing a group of people together at the beginning of a mission and getting us excited about this great mission, this great journey that we're going to be on. And so after a brief introduction of myself, I then said to these 24 seniors in this class in entrepreneurship, raise your hand if you want to talk about the business that you've started. Nobody raised their hand. I thought, oh, okay, yeah, you're Duke seniors. You've been way too busy. Raise your hand if you want to talk about the business you're thinking about starting within the next 5 years. And to my surprise, nobody raised their hand. And I said, wow, I asked the question that you would ask. Why are you taking a class in entrepreneurship if you have absolutely no interest in starting a business? And again, keep in mind, there aren't any other business classes outside of this program. And so we talked for 15, 20 minutes, and finally we could parse together their answers, and they started to coalesce around the idea that they appreciated that regardless of what they did in their careers, whether they went into consulting, whether they went into investment banking, went into management, into real estate development, that they had a sense, maybe somebody told them, maybe they intuited it, that they would be more successful if they were their most creative and their most entrepreneurial selves. And I thought, oh my gosh, that sounds a whole lot more fun to develop a class that would be all about helping folks become their most creative and entrepreneurial selves rather than teach a class on how to finance a startup and teach a class on the legal aspects of starting a business. So I said, okay, let's do it. put aside the curriculum that Duke had provided me with. I spent the whole semester sort of looking over my shoulder, expecting that any day they were going to come in and check what I was doing. They never did. And I began to revise on the fly, create on the fly content for this class. First place I went and looked was within my work experiences. And I was a fishing guide when I was 15 years old. And I looked at my experiences in the back of the boat as a fishing guide in the mid-60s, guiding very successful businessmen, bank presidents, owners of manufacturing facilities. And I came to understand in the back of the boat that I could gain authority and have leadership over this trip, a 15-year-old kid leading 55-year-old successful men, if I could do two things. And again, I didn't realize that this is what I was doing. It was only later that I saw that this is what I was doing. I began to use story as a servant leader might use story. I began to serve them, the men in my boat, by sharing the most extraordinary versions of what we're doing out on the water. Always authentic, but telling them the very best versions of the story about the day that we're having. And the better I served them, the more I told them that this was a wonderful day, a spectacular day. Boy, nobody's ever caught so many fish out of this bay. The more authority I was granted. So one of the things I learned that I brought into my class was how story and servant leadership is so very, very powerful. What I learned from the marketing services company that I was a CEO and a partner of, FGI, was the power of open-endedness. So that content was also shared along with leadership, servant leadership and story. Open-endedness, how did I learn that? I learned that because I was part of FGI in the pre-digital days. And so when an ad was being laid out, when a brochure was being created and there were visuals, the art director couldn't just go online and pull down a stock image and drop it in there in place just to help us understand what that visual would be. No, instead they had to sketch it. They had to do a pencil sketch of the image so that we could understand how the image was going to support the text, how the text was going to play off the image. And I discovered that time and time again, I preferred the image, the sketch, much more than I ever appreciated the final piece of art. Again, I didn't understand why at the time. I came to understand it's because when I saw this incomplete, open-ended pencil sketch, I had to complete it. I had to use my imagination to complete this image. And that engages me. That gets me into it. That makes me a part of it. And so here's how you can use that practically, and that is next time you're doing a PowerPoint presentation, don't. Instead, write your slides out on a whiteboard as you're explaining what this is all about. And research shows that when people see the content being created in front of their eyes like that, instead of, again, a fixed PowerPoint slide, but instead the information, the point, is written on the whiteboard for them, once again, they lean into it. They want to wonder, they're wondering how that sentence is going to be completed. They're a part of it in a way that they aren't when they see a finished slide. So that's our first segment, folks. Coming back from the break, and I've got some more for you on this origin story.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. In the first segment, I set up the fact that I am captivated by my calling, the calling to help each of us and all of us become our most creative selves. I'm telling you the origin of that calling. So I completed my first class at Duke. They never did look over my shoulder to see what I was doing. And then they scheduled me to teach the class again the next fall. Without any conversation, I just realized, okay, I'm scheduled to teach the same class the next fall, in fall of 2002, again a class with entrepreneurship in the title. So I did the same thing. I asked folks to raise their hand if they were interested in entrepreneurship. In this case, a couple of people did. But those people quickly said that they had heard what I had done with the entrepreneurship class back in the spring. And that's what they wanted. That's what they wanted. And so we did the same thing in this second semester, again, creating putting Duke's curriculum syllabus aside and developing this course on helping people become their most creative and entrepreneurial selves. It seemed the kids were really digging it. It seemed they were really getting something out of it. And so I decided somewhere towards the end of that semester that I would search out the leadership of the Markets and Management program at Duke and tell them what I had done to their class and tell them that I would love to teach the class that this has become, this class on being creative and entrepreneurial. And they agreed. They agreed to let me name it. They agreed to let me further its definition. And so a year after my first teaching experience at Duke, we kicked off the class, and for 14 years I taught this version of this class, often with the same name, often with different names, but the name at the time was Being Creative and Entrepreneurial. That was the name of the class, and so the word creativity, or excuse me, the word creative showed up in the course description for the first time. Well, we're a couple of weeks into that class when a couple of Duke professors found me in the hall. I don't remember exactly where the conversation took place, but with a sense of challenge in their voices, as at least that's how I perceived it, they said to me, "Hey, Nordgren, whose definition of creativity do you use for this class? Yeah. What research into creativity is your class based on?" And folks, I felt like a fraud. I really felt like I had been found out as a fraud because I had no inclination that I ever needed to define creativity, nor could I come up with a definition there in the moment. I could not define creativity there in the moment. Well, I subsequently realized that while I couldn't define creativity then, I know now I shouldn't define creativity. It's too important to define creativity. Definitions are exclusive, right? You're either in or you're out. And we all benefit from an inclusive, open-ended, once again, open-ended understanding of what it means to be creative. Definitions are also fixed, right? That's the purpose of a definition, is to fix an understanding. Well, when the whole world is changing and changing constantly and changing unpredictably, the qualities, the tools that we need to attend to that ever-changing world have got to be flexible, right? They've got to be situationally appropriate. And so the tool must be flexible for the times. So having come to that conclusion that I'm not going to define creativity for anybody, I'm still left with some responsibility. First of all, I embraced Johann Goethe's view that thinking is better than knowing. And of course, that's not always true. Somebody's going to operate on your loved one. You want them to not only know, you want them to have expert knowledge. Somebody's going to build a bridge. You want them to have expert knowledge. But for our purposes, for the topic of creativity and entrepreneurship, it's much more helpful for somebody to be thinking about what it means to them rather than this old dude telling them what it means. And then Charlie Mingus, the jazz composer, the jazz great, I think he was a bass player, comes into the picture here now as well, because Mingus was once quoted as saying, "You want me to improvise, man? You got to give me something to riff off of." And so I want you to create your own understanding of what it means to be creative, but I don't want to have you start in a vacuum. And so over the years, I have collected, boy, it's over 80 now, different behaviors and prompts and ideas and concepts and perspectives about what it means to be creative, what it means to be entrepreneurial. I serve those prompts to people so that they can use those, again, to craft their own understanding of what it means to be creative. So I continued to teach for about 14 years at Duke. Somewhere around year three or four is when it became my calling, and it became my calling when I came upon the research. You've heard me reference it here on the radio a couple of times a month probably, and that is a piece of research that NASA was involved in back in the 60s when NASA needed to hire all the most creative scientists and engineers they could find. So they hired a fella to come up with an assessment tool to measure core creative cognitive processes. NASA dug the tool. They thought it was very accurate. They used it with their own current scientists and engineers before they used it as a recruitment tool. The folks that scored by far the best on the assessment, they called them their creative geniuses. I had always thought that creativity was It wasn't a special gift of a privileged few, that it was as common as clay and all the more wonderful because it was. I never would have been so bold as to be calling us creative geniuses if this NASA research hadn't given me permission to do so. And that's when the calling emerged. That's when the calling emerged, when I had this validation of my idea, of my sense of the world, that we're all creative. This research validating that seemed to be the last piece I needed to really embrace this as a calling. And so for years, I've now been doing this just short of 25 years, I've been trying to work with as many different groups, as many different cohorts, entrepreneurs, scientists, artists, teachers, students, military leaders, the folks that work for the military, you know, that report to the military leaders, as many different cohorts as I possibly could find, so that I could keep checking and challenging this content and make sure that it is universally applicable, that it is important for everybody. In fact, folks, let me remind you of an offer I made a few months ago. Let me repeat it to you again right now. I would love to do a free workshop, a free creativity workshop, hour long, 90 minutes. You provide the space. You get 10 people there. I'll be there. I'll be there for sure. My new email, so that you can reach out to me if you think that you'd like me to come in and do a workshop for you. My new email is my name's Carl Nordgren, number 14, Carl Nordgren 14 at gmail.com. Reach out to me and I would be delighted to work with you on pulling together a workshop for you all. And so we've got a break coming up, folks. We have one more segment. Come on back and we'll finish up the origin story. Thank you.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. In the first two segments, I was talking to you about where this idea that each of us and all of us need to be our most creative selves, and why it's so important that I don't define creativity for you. I was sharing with you where those ideas came from. Increasingly of late, this work that I'm doing has been orienting me towards the future and politics. I'm surprised by it. I never anticipated it. It was sort of an inadvertent discovery, right? 98%, as I mentioned, 98% of us are born with remarkable creative qualities. I have shared that story, folks, with 10,000 people, with 10,000 folks, as I indicated earlier, from a great, great range of perspectives, great, great range of professions. And I can assure you that the idea that we are have that common ground, that we're all born with these remarkable creative qualities, this is as attractive to the left as it is to the right. It is as useful for rural and farm people as it is for suburban and urban people. It's important for folks who have and for folks who don't have yet. It's embraced by folks my age and older, and it's really important for younger folks, isn't it? And so doesn't our nation need so very, very badly, don't we need common ground, right? We need common ground that we can stand on together and look at the incredible challenges that the future has in hold for us, as well as the great opportunities. So on that piece of common ground, we find there the most rational and the most optimistic stories of preparation for our unknowable future. It is an unknowable future, constant change, more fierce disruption, great opportunities that we can't imagine. Futurists, when they submit their five-year plans, they say, hey, look, the most likely scenario that we project isn't very likely. So nobody has any idea what the future is about. Nobody's talking to us from a political leadership position about the fact that we have no idea what the future is. Isn't it rational to prepare for the unknown by cultivating your creative and your entrepreneurial qualities? And it's optimistic because it plays to our strengths. That's who we are. It's also optimistic because it's rational that we be developing our creative and our entrepreneurial qualities to prep ourselves for an unknowable unknown, a future of continuous, constant, unpredictable change, a future that will be marked time and again with more fierce disruptions like the one that we went through. Maybe what the one we went through will teach us something about the next one. Maybe it won't. But it's also a future, as I quickly mentioned, of unbelievable opportunity, unimaginable technology breakthroughs that will spawn all kinds of opportunity. The best way to prepare for all of that is to be your most creative and your most entrepreneurial selves. The best first step to take in that preparation is to be intentional, to say to yourself that from now on, I'm going to be my most creative self so that I am best positioned to make my way regardless of what I find as the future encroaches, as we live into the future. And when you make that commitment, when you decide this is who you're going to be, you win. You get a victory right away in that authentic declaration that you're going to be your most creative self. You have an immediate victory, and that is you begin to see the world as a creative person sees the world. The 4P professions, poets, psychiatrists, philosophers, and physicists, they all agree from their very different professional perspectives that we don't see the world the way it is. We see the world the way we are. And so when you are a creative and entrepreneurial person, you see the world the way a creative and entrepreneurial person sees the world. Again, it might be just an incremental change initially, but boy, very often that incremental change is what it takes for you to see an opportunity just a little bit differently, a problem just a little bit differently. You want to have a bias for action, right? Take that intentionality and apply it with a bias for action that is directed towards getting as many different perspectives as you possibly can. The only way we can overcome the status quo and see what's actually there, not what we're expecting to be there, is by getting as many different perspectives on it as we possibly can. Use that bias for action, that intentionality, to make sure you get those many, many different perspectives. Here's a exercise that will help you get over this status quo vision of the world that will often keep us from seeing what's actually happening. And it's called a 30-day creative action program. Every day for the 30 days, once a day for 30 days, you do one of two things. You either do something you've never done before, or you do something you do regularly, habitually, in a whole new fashion. That's an easy one to describe. I brush my teeth right-handed. Today, I'm going to brush my teeth left-handed. I have never walked out the door of my front door at my house, and the very first object I've seen, brought up a brand new name for it. That's an example of something that somebody shared with me when they were doing a 30-day cap. So once a day, do one thing, either something you've never done before or something you do regularly in a whole new fashion. You don't repeat those over the 30 days. You just do it once. Next week, folks, I'm so excited about our guest. It's Juliet Gordy, the granddaughter of Berry Gordy, the gentleman who founded Motown Records. Juliet's got a lot of really cool accomplishments on her own that we're going to be hearing about, but I've already warned her that I'll be a bit of a fanboy. I loved Motown growing up, and so I hope you can join us for next week. Go Heels, beat those TCU bad guys, and I hope you all have a beautiful weekend.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.